Marcus, JJ, how's your trades going?
Are you an Asian like hot babes hitting my DM chum?
Yes, I am. I'm a Twitter bot right here.
Yeah, those Asian girls. Why are they always Asian girls? And lately they're always following me saying we offer short crypto pumps. You guys get those soon?
Yep. Yeah, I get those ones, and I give them that block.
I think the scammers are more performing in Telegram. I get like almost like once a day on Telegram, but you know, on Twitter they are like super like fit Asian babes, you know. But on Telegram it's interesting because they are like mid girls, like they are 4 to 6. They are kind of chubby and stuff, so they are more kind of, you know, they're more clever on Telegram, you know.
Yeah, that is clever. Yeah, you're like, oh, maybe this is an actual human being.
Yeah, and it's written like single mom from Wisconsin or whatever. It's probably like a Nigerian guy somewhere.
The thing that happens to me on Telegram is I get added into like a bunch of random groups that are just spam. Mm-hmm. That's what I get. That's what happens to me. Mm-hmm.
So many scammers around there, man.
Yes, yes. Okay, well, welcome everybody to Bitcoiner's Guide, the show that we wish we would have had when we first started learning about Bitcoin. So I made it for you. We're your host, Big Sean Harris, Plan Marcus. We got Gigi. I can't speak French. My French is terrible. First question before we start in any of this. Right.
Not to be confused with Gigi.
Yeah,
not to be JJ and Gigi.
Yeah, okay. So the biggest question is because everyone will call you Gigi, or no, everyone calls you Gigglesmer.
Yeah.
So here's the question. How do you pronounce your name? First question before we get into Bitcoin.
It's hard. Where's because if I say it in French, like you wouldn't get it. Like it's funny, in Simply Bitcoin they always say like Gigglesmer. It sounds good. No, yeah. GG, call me GG. GG La Saumur, GG LS, whatever. Whatever's YouTube, bro. Like it's just a random nickname. I have no like branding. I don't care. I'm just like, sometimes I change my name too. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah, right now. You're one of those hot girls that right now.
You used to do that during like the bull market, you know, having fun on Twitter or changing or handle, transitioning into girls or transitioning into like Asian people. But like, it's a bear market, but like, come on, guys, we can still like have fun and shitpost around. And actually, it's interesting because I've did it because I was talking in a group like with Twitter plebs, and I've said, yeah, you know what? Like if you transform your pics into a girl, you just have like 5x in any of your tweets. And it's real. Like if you put like a pic of a girl as a profile pic and you just tweet the same thing, you're just going to get like 5 times the engagement. So it's interesting to see how it works, you know, especially when you have like based take and you're a chick, like people are like, what is it even possible, a chick that sing this way? So it's but I'm like gender fluid, so I'm probably going to transition back to JJ very soon.
Okay so we need more women in Bitcoin is what you're saying. Is that the whole thing you're doing right now?
You could see it this way. Yeah, I'm maybe feminist, bro. I don't know, I didn't knew it, but you know, maybe.
Dude, you've had some legendary trolls. I mean, switching to girl troll is okay, but you've had a couple of legendary trolls. The biggest one that I remember was the one that I think Yahoo News picked up. What was that one? Like you changed to an Israeli.
Israeli, it's like it's nothing really thoughtful. It's just like being in random plebs chat groups on Twitter with fellow mentors or memers or even meme factory and just like being bored and like just shitposting and saying like, oh yeah, let's try to pump the price and let's try to trick like big influencers. And yeah, it works. Like I've changed my profile pic, changed to a business investment fund from Israel and write down in like Hebrew, like, yeah, we bought like 2.3 billion like Bitcoin as a reserve currency for Israel. And like, then everybody's like sharing it and like it goes through the news and like my account got banned. So that was a good fun. Yeah, good ride. But we've did it several times actually. We've did it with like Putin buying Bitcoin, like with the fake like news released in like in Russian, and this one actually pumps the price a little bit. Like if you see like when big account like share it, you see like a little spike on the price. So yeah, like yeah, I did like, a Bitcoin hike. You know, it's fun. You know, but what is actually interesting is like we've did it like for fun. You know, several times for fun. But like I don't know if you remember, but like a few months later, they were because when I do it, like I don't trade or whatever, you know, it's just for shitposting. Yeah. But I don't know if you remember, like last year, some people did it and they successfully like hacked the official website of like Walmart. I don't know if you remember, and yes, they did like a press release, and they were clever because they actually said, okay, we're gonna accept Bitcoin and Litecoin. But the thing is, Litecoin is a smaller market cap.
Easier to manipulate.
Easier to manipulate. And the crazy thing is like Reuters, AFP, all the big name agencies, like news agencies, they released it. So they was on Reuters. Like Walmart's gonna accept Bitcoin next month or whatever, and so I think they made like the price of Litecoin like pump like 30%, and Bitcoin like 7 or 9%. And I'm sure these guys were like clever enough to long the shit out of this. And like, bro, if you long like a 30% up, like with leverage and like with like even like few thousand euros, you made fucking banking. So these guys were fucking clever. So
you gotta be careful because you could end up in jail doing not you, but those people could end up in jail.
Yeah, but who cares these days? You know, like they're probably somewhere in the world. You know, and like they are actually fucking clever. And like, but at the end of the day, it's just like you realize how like the news, everything is just like manufactured and like. These people don't
nothing
even
gets checked, right? Share. They don't check anything. It's like literally just a random pleb on Bitcoin Twitter that's, you know, maybe one or two accounts post something. And, you know, as soon as Yahoo or one or Reuters, one official puts it on without checking, obviously, the rest just follows because, I don't know, it's it kind of reminds me of like the rating agencies, like the Moody's and stuff, you know? They are literally on record saying that, no, we don't actually check if these companies are solvent. It's just our opinion because they're afraid to get sued, right? They literally say in court, it's just our opinion. We don't check, but the whole financial market leans on these agencies. You know, when they say something, it moves everything. And same thing with the media. If they don't do their work and check their work properly, then
like think about that. If a bunch of working class
Polybit
us on Twitter can like kind of make a dent. Yeah, my bad. And imagine like people with like network and like millions of dollars and billions of dollars, they do what the fuck they want, you know. Like it's interesting to see.
There's another side to it, right? What about if you think about it this way? Like on the one hand, we're used to being like a nobody, you know, in this big world, and you don't have a voice. But actually, maybe through social media, we have a bigger voice and a bigger impact than we always thought we had.
True, especially as a whole, you know.
Remember when Bob Malakas released an article that Honduras was going to put Bitcoin on their balance sheet?
Who, Honduras?
Honduras.
Oh yeah.
The country of Honduras. And then a bunch of like these random crypto influencers picked it up, released Bob Malakas' article, and then they shared his article, and then they started pushing it themselves. And then like a week later, Honduras, the country, had to come out and say that they weren't adding Bitcoin to their.
Oh, really? Like the official press release. That's
But this is what Elon Musk does, right? Like he actually what Marcus is reminding, you're saying like, yeah, we're kind of nobodies, but Elon Musk, he's been doing the same thing with Tesla stock, with Dogecoin for years now. And he'll say one word about Doge and it'll pump like crazy. And who knows if he had bought like some Doge at that time just to pump it or just to have fun or just to feel like kind of like a god, you know? So it is kind of interesting how someone like anyone can get out there and try to pump some type of crypto or even Bitcoin by posting some.
You know who's the best at this? The Fed itself.
Yeah.
The Fed comes out, whatever they're going to say, they know what the market is going to do.
Bro, like they dictate everything that's happening, and fucking Bitcoin is 100% correlated to Fed like price hikes. Like we can see it. Like if you look in retrospect, like the all-time high of the S&P 500 and Nasdaq is the same as the all-time high of Bitcoin. You know, like almost to the day. You know.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's kind of fun, right? I mean, for me myself, it's been kind of a journey as well to see like, okay, how far can a meme go and how much impact can you have with just a meme? Obviously, Laser Eyes was a big one. It wasn't just, anyway, it was a bigger
initiative. Yeah, that was like
initiative, but that was like, holy shit, you can have like impact with social media, right?
And yeah.
It's not that we're like trying to trade on it or, you know,
do you know
the
what's
worst the, case, the, we're just trying to pump Bitcoin's price.
The funniest was like during like Trump election, like 5-7 years ago. Something yeah. Like that, when they had like, who was like the famous like LeBeouf, like the actor, he was doing a protest. What was it? Oh yeah, he was doing like a live show on Times Square or whatever against Trump. Did you remember that?
Oh, I don't know. I thought you were talking about something else.
Okay.
Yeah, but keep
going. Let me record it. It was a long time ago. Okay, so this guy, like Shia LaBeouf, the famous actor.
Oh, yeah.
He did like a live show. Like he was, okay, I'm going to record like 24/7 until the election to fight against Trump, okay? So he did the first one like in New York. But there were so many Trump supporters coming and disrupt the thing that he was like, okay, I'm gonna do it in a hidden place, you know? So he put like an American flag or whatever in a field somewhere in America, and he did like the 24/7 live to protest against Trump. And these people are in 4chan, like for weeks, they were trying to find where was the place. So they were watching like the plane coming on the sky, and with the plane coming on the sky, they kind of knew-ish where was the place.
Yeah.
So then like they sent like a guy like with a pickup truck, like driving around the area and doing noise like, so they can catch on the live if he was near or not. And then they finally like found the place and took it down. And it was like a coordinated like stuff during like weeks on 4chan, you know, and I found it like kind of funny how like these guys like can like take down like real world events, you know, just by shitposting online, you know.
It's crazy, right? If you look at some of like the responses, like today, I think it was Greenpeace USA posted something, you know, about how Bitcoin is bad for the environment. And obviously they were paid by XRP, something in the amount of millions of dollars. But then if you look at the comments and the replies, it's just like the entire Bitcoin community and even the wider crypto community is like all under it ratioing. And you have like the World Economic Forum having to turn off their chat replies, you know, making sure that nobody can actually reply to their tweets. So yeah, it's a thing. There's seems to be like a shift going on. Please.
I hope, bro. I don't know. Like I was talking with you like the other day. I'm getting kind of like skeptical and like I don't know. Maybe it's because it's a bear market, but I think like COVID vaccination and stuff. I'm getting pretty like skeptical about it. To trigger people, I was tweeting about this like the other day, like saying like mass adoption will never happen because like normies are too
Coinbit.
To make self-custody, and there will be too afraid to have responsibilities on their holding. So I'll be fine as Bitcoin as a tool for sovereign individual, like a minority of sovereign individual. I don't know how it's gonna play out, but I'm pretty like skeptic about like the future of the of what's happening like with people. You know, I don't know. I think like it's like the if you look at the data, like it's Pareto law, like it's 20-80. Like 20% of people are unvaccinated and 80% of people are vaccinated. If you look at the data, like in United States, Europe, it's pretty much the same. And I think like we really need to focus on the 20% because like the other people are fucking weak.
Point beat.
Regarded.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Yeah, it's for YouTube, my bad. I'm sorry, bro.
I gotta go bleep if you hear some bleeps.
Yeah.
He said regarded.
Sorry.
Very good. Yeah, it just makes me think, well, first of all, not many know this who are watching. Gigi is one of the few people who have actually met Marcus and myself.
Yep.
So big props. I think we were talking before, there's two other guys who have also done that. So I met you out in Paris at a Bitcoin meetup in Paris, which was really cool.
Can I say something about that? Like,
yeah,
I interrupt
yeah.
you. Yeah, it was yeah. funny because it was like a bunch of French in a restaurant and you were the only American. And when it was time to order, they all took a burger.
Yes.
And you were like, bro, I'm in Paris. I'm not going to take a burger. So all the French guys were having burger and you ordered like a croque monsieur.
Croque monsieur.
Yeah, that was funny. That was funny.
That is true. I forgot about that. Maybe you guys were just trying to make me feel like I was at home, you know, ordering some burgers. But yeah, I get the feeling with you, right? Like, I love how you tweet. I love your mindset, honestly, because you're like, okay, if we're getting lied to and getting lied to, well, let's push it and see how far we will get lied to. And let's see like what they'll stop us from doing. That's not even bad. Like Shia LaBeouf doing that thing that he did. Like, who cares if he's whatever he's doing, right? It doesn't really matter. And like, what makes you like have that tick inside of you that wants to see like how far can you push things and how far can you go? Is there something inside of you that makes you want to know, okay, what are they going to try to cancel me or censor me for?
I don't know, bro. I think at the end of the day, it came out to my vision of the world. You know, growing up, like my father used to be like a journalist, but like a small scale journalist, like for regional stuff. And like growing up, like I remember like every time he was watching the news, he was like saying, oh, that's bullshit because of that. That's bullshit because of that. So growing up, I pretty much like kind of had like this idea, like, okay, I shouldn't take for granted what's coming on the news. So, mm-hmm. And like then, like when I was like 16, 17, I've discovered like 9/11, went into like community online. Then like, I really like felt anger, like, when, for example, like in 2011, like France like invaded like Libya and took down like Gaddafi, bombing him, because in the news they were just repeating like fucking like war propaganda, like, oh, we go there for democracy, we go there for human rights and stuff. And I knew even back then that we were going there because fucking Gaddafi wanted to set up like a gold-backed currency, you know. So I really felt like anger, and I think like these people, like, I don't know, are it's a fucking clown world. So what you gonna do, bro? It's just like a facade. They want to create a reality that doesn't exist. So like it's a farce. So let's farce them harder. You know what I'm saying? That's that's my view on this. It's all bullshit. So like let's play their game and let's go into the clone world even harder. You know.
So I don't know. It seems like, because I always think I kind of agree on that sentiment, right? But it seems like we could be very skeptical or very nihilistic if there was no such thing as Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And it makes me very happy, honestly, when I found Bitcoin and I found all the lies that it exposes. Like, what it seems like you were born to be a Bitcoiner, with that type of background. What made you recognize that Bitcoin wasn't one of those lies, or is it one of those lies that is it like an OPSEC from the mainstream media that they hate on it, but in reality, it's, you know, who knows? Like, what made you get more about
it? It wasn't like a wow moment. It took time. I actually, like, when I went into Bitcoin in 2017, I was just into like, okay, I need to, because I've read this book, like, Rich Dad Poor Dad, and it has some money in the bank, and I was like, okay, I'm getting screwed. Like, what should I do? Where should I invest my money? And I was like, it was purely like business. I didn't thought about politics or life in general when I first come into Bitcoin. But then, like, you go into crypto too, and then you get wrecked, and then you start to educate yourself. So it took me a year and a half to like fully understand like the impact of Bitcoin and all these things. So it was gradually, you know, it was gradually like listening to guys like back in the day, like Andreas Antonopoulos, reading. I remember like reading too, like, I think it was in 2019 when it came out, like one of the first like BitNote article. It was like Bitcoin and the scarcity of time. Uh-huh. It's a really cool article that explained like inflation, how you're getting screwed and stuff. So it all made sense, actually. Like, it all made sense. Like, actually, when I really discovered Bitcoin, I was like, yeah, that's what I was looking for when I was like thinking about becoming a prepper and buying a farm and going live off grid like 10 years ago, you know?
Oh, yeah. It makes me think too, like, a lot of times I think about Bitcoin, I think about how the United States got formed, which I realize you guys aren't from the United States, and we might have a lot of listeners who aren't from the US, but it makes me think about, you know, the people that were rebelling against the English and British government. You know, they were probably a very small minority of people who were wanting to rebel, that they saw the lies that were happening. I'm sure there were a lot of people at that time who didn't see the lies. Like, oh, let's just pay a little tax on, you know, on the tea. Let's just pay a little tax here. Like, you know, they're protecting us and all this other stuff. And so, and then there was a few people who said, no, like, we need our freedom. We want to, you know, we want, there's George Washington out there. And there's other people as well who can see through a lot of the propaganda. And it just makes me think that this is kind of like a story as old as the world has existed, is that there will be people who will lie to you, who will try to get you to fall along their narrative. And then there will be other people who will try to get you to believe in their narrative. And most of the time, those people look crazy, you know? And I just try to think about, like, I wonder what those, you know, the founding fathers were thinking about, founding fathers of the United States were thinking about when they were going through that. And like, how do we as Bitcoiners, first of all, keep our sanity, because we're told that we're psychopaths, that we bought into a Ponzi scheme, that Bitcoins can't be money, and all of these things. Like, how do you gain conviction in what Bitcoin is?
To me, like, Bitcoin is like a lifeboat, like Noah and the Ark. You know, it's like something gonna allows you to live as a sovereign individual. And like, you know what I'm more dreaming about? I don't really care about mass adoption. I'm more caring about like developing like a peer-to-peer network of sovereign, like-minded individual, like that can like trade in Bitcoin. Because at the end of the day, if you earn your money in Bitcoin, if you spend your Bitcoin, if you saving Bitcoin, you're like, you can avoid paying taxes, you can travel everywhere you want, so you can fly above like the all the bullshit in this world. So I'm more interested in that, like developing like networks, Bitcoin as a tool to develop like networks of like-minded individual which have like kind of freedom maximalist mindset, rather than, oh, we should wish for mass adoption at all costs, you know.
And why, what do you think that there's negativity, like negatives to mass adoption versus having peer-to-peer, strictly peer-to-peer?
Because like you know, like what Morpheus says in the Matrix, like some people don't want to be unplugged. Yeah. Some people just don't want to be unplugged, and they are to understand Bitcoin and to use it properly and to go into self-custody, you need to go through a type of like it takes time, you know, and it takes you to learn and understand how it is. Like, and if tomorrow like everybody's gonna buy Bitcoin, how it's gonna end up? People will go into a platform where they offer yield with dopamine ads and stuff. And you know exchanges. What I mean? Of course, yeah. And like the thing is, like most people would be too scared to hold their life earning in a private key, because like at the end of the day, I think there is limits to Bitcoin, because in terms of inheritance, in terms of all these things, you know, it's kind of scary for the average Joe to think like, okay, there is two options. Either I mess up my setup and I get like an inheritance plan, or you know what I'm saying? It's not that easy for the average Joe, you know, because like if you lose your mind or if you're screwed. But if you want to have security, you need to accept a little bit of a risk, you know, because if you say to your wife, I don't know, where is your seat plate stored, and like she find another dude or whatever, you know what I mean? It's not that easy. and I've been thinking about this like a lot.
Okay, but don't you think that technology will make it easier over time, just as like
probably internet, yeah.
You know, it was very hard to hook up a computer to a modem back in the day, but nowadays, you know, like your phone just comes and connects automatically to Wi-Fi and you're online.
Yeah, sure.
You
know? But I'm talking about like today, you know, so
sure.
I don't know. I'm more about like, yeah, let's find the freedom maximalist in the world and let's like hook them up into Bitcoin, you know. Like all the libertarians, all the gold bugs, all the yellow vest guys, you know, and let's like craft like a good network of all these anti-state people in the world. And if at least we get like all the people that are like really into freedom in the entire world, that would be like a fucking success. And when we got these guys, let's move to mainstream, you know, because at the end of the day, like if you go, like I used to go in a yellow vest protest like in France, like, and the anti-vax protest and stuff, with like my Buy Bitcoin shirt and panels and stuff, and people had no clue. They were like, what the fuck? They didn't make like the correlation in between like Bitcoin as an investment and Bitcoin as a political tool, you know. For them, Bitcoin was like investing in stock or investing in like Pokemon cards or stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, they don't see it as a tool of freedom. And I think that's why, in my mind, I see that Bitcoin it'll hit mass adoption regardless of whatever we want to or not, just because I'm reminded of the old Michael Saylor quote where he says, you may not be interested in Bitcoin, but Bitcoin's interested in you. And eventually you'll have enough freedoms infringed upon that you'll want to figure out what Bitcoin is, you know, whether that's because of a CBDC or whether that's because you have to show it. And, you know, we've been seeing these videos that in China, right, they've been having to show a green COVID pass every 48 hours. They got to get a new test, and there's kids running out of their schools. Who knows if those are true videos or not, first of all, right? But if they are true videos, you know, it's a very dystopian idea that you have to show, you have to prove that you're sick until proven healthy. And that was like the whole COVID thing, right? And in the United States, we used to have this idea that you were innocent until proven guilty. And when COVID came along, it was like you were guilty, or you were sick was guilty. And you were guilty until proven innocent, or you were sick, even if you had no symptoms, you were guilty until you were proven innocent. And it was amazing how people just fell for that. And people who didn't go along with that were treated like criminals, like they were guilty of some crime. And so it's very interesting how we try to give up our freedoms, our security, or we try to give up our freedoms for security, right? That's what we think we're doing. But in reality, the old Ron Paul quote was like, if you give up your freedom for security, then you lose both. And so I think that's kind of what we're seeing is a lot of people are realizing the freedoms that they're giving up. And, you know, for a while, I'm sure a lot of us will be made to look like conspiracy theorists or whatever, but eventually people will say, okay, enough is enough. I want my freedom and I'll do whatever it takes to get my freedom. And hopefully that doesn't mean fighting a war. Hopefully it means a peaceful revolution, which Bitcoin can provide.
Yeah,
Go ahead, go ahead. Sorry.
I think at the end of the day, like it's the hardest money always win. It's kind of like a natural law, you know? But the thing is like, we need to just be careful to don't rush mass adoption because like the gold standard was a shitcoin when it was like paper gold, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like we can't go to a Bitcoin standard, which is like paper BTC with like Fort Knox is empty. There is no gold reserve, you know? And like we can't go the same route like with Bitcoin. So that's why I'm really like, okay, let's make it like, you know, to have like the good foundation, you know, that's
so you're saying that if you talk about like that 20-80 rule, right? Some people don't want to wake up, and that's probably the majority of people, unfortunately. And they have the full trust in the government, thinking that the government works for them and has their best interests at heart. Would you say that if the government says, guys, Bitcoin is really bad, whether it's because of the environment or it's destabilizing the economy or whatever, so we are going to ban it, we're going to make it illegal. Do you see that as like a threat to Bitcoin? Do you think that maybe if Bitcoin adopts too fast and it goes up too fast, up high in price, that the government still has a chance to say, you know what, guys, this is getting out of hand. Too many people are fleeing into Bitcoin. We've got to cut this thing off now.
That's
something what you see?
I don't know about like other country, but in France it's really bad. Like because if I go to people my age or younger in France, for them like global warming is a fucking like big concern. The media and the government they arrive like to make people scared about what they want. Mm-hmm. So people are at the moment, like, you know, 2 days ago in France they had like a protest. They say it's about rising costs. They say that on Twitter, but it's actually about rising costs and global warming, and it's organized by the Communist Party. People are really concerned about all this bullshit, like about CO2 emission, and they will beg like for a socialist or a communist takeover, because they think that capitalism is bad because they have their vision of like crony capitalism. So, bro, like I don't think like today like people have understand the value proposition of Bitcoin and their mindset. In their mindset, it's impossible to do, you know, because they haven't identified the real roots of the problem. And if you want to understand Bitcoin, you need to first of all understand the roots of the problem. But people are messed up, so they don't understand the problem. So I guess it's going to be harder for them to understand Bitcoin, especially when like the main narrative at the moment. Like if you think about that, like the world is it's big narrative. Like after 9/11, for like almost 20 years, we had like the Islamic threat, okay? So we were going to war in Iraq, we were going to war in Afghanistan. They tried to take down Bashar al-Assad in Syria. They tried to take down the government in Iran. And it was because of like the psyops of like Muslim threat and stuff like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Al-Qaeda, turned, ISIS.
Yeah, Al-Qaeda, which, yeah, you know it is. And then they flipped to COVID.
I wonder if we're really going to get banned with this stream, by the way. we're like hitting like all the check marks for the algorithm here.
Then they went to
COVID. We're gonna post it, so we'll see what YouTube thinks about it.
Yeah, I'm gonna make you banned, guys. You're gonna be on.
I want to make a comment about this later on. Yeah, remind me.
You're gonna end up on a BitChute talking about the Holocaust and stuff.
Oh God.
Then there were COVID, but they saw that COVID was falling flat because at the end of the day, people realized it was like the flu. And now, like, the big narratives are global warming and Putin, you know. So to people, like, the main problem is like Putin price hike and global warming. So people haven't identified like the real roots of the problem, which is like money debasement and censorship and all these things, you know.
Why do you think people haven't figured that out? Like, what? Do you think people just kind of like, there's a lot of people who just don't think deeply about things, that they just like go through their life and they just follow whatever their parents told them to do, and that's it.
But bro, it's have been the same for the since the dawn of the human time. Like, people, an average people, that just follow the mainstream narratives, you know what I mean? Like, at the time they were, it's always been like that. And if one day we become the mainstream narrative, like, people will follow us, you know, like,
I would like to speak to that, to be honest, because to be completely honest, I used to be like that, like, up until like 2018 probably. I mean, I got like into Bitcoin in 2017, but I didn't get until later, till I started seeing, till like my worldview, like, Bitcoin literally shifted my worldview. I was completely left-leaning, to put it mildly, you know. And when you would say Trump to me or Republican to me before 2017, I was thinking, okay, like, redneck, maybe even racist kind of people, you know.
That could still probably be true.
in Holland, in Holland as well, you know, I used to say there's, for some reason, there's like, in every country, there's like 30% of people that are just like
one bit,
and they just they are just more nationalistic, they are more like right-leaning, racist. That's the way I was thinking. And I was able to make sense of the world growing up, you know, and just listening to, indeed, what you learned in school, what you learn on television, how the world works. It's like this, you're being painted a world that seems to be working, right? Like, you go to university, that's where the professors are, it's true science, then you go to work. And yeah, I don't know, for me, it was 9/11 was a wake-up call for me, because I realized, okay, something's really wrong here, because I studied engineering, and, you know, that building number 7 coming down, and even the Twin Towers, I had a lot of questions, and I sort of found that movie Zeitgeist. So I that was my first like conspiracy theory, right? And I was really embarrassed to tell people, I wouldn't tell people about it and stuff. And then, to be honest, you know, you get drawn into Bitcoin because what is this crazy thing that's just like, first of all, increasing in price? You know, you get drawn in by price, and it's like, am I missing out here? What's happening here? How can this be? Can something like made up digitally really be money? And then through Bitcoin, you walk into like all these libertarians, you know, and even Satoshi and his writings, you know, talks about, you know, like, no, this is really about ending the banks and ending the fiat system, which is like this corrupt system. So you're like, and at first, you know, like, you're kind of like, I don't want to get into all that dark, grim conspiracy stuff. It's like you actively block out like this negative image of the world because you want to do good for the world. I don't know. I'm just trying to dig back into like how I was feeling. And even like today, sometimes I still get like triggered a little bit, like on Twitter sometimes. It's like, oh, this negative, you know, how negative the world is. Sometimes I really wish we could focus a little bit more on like the positive outcomes, or visualize those more. But yeah, I don't know. So
I guess
I come from that side, and I still sometimes lean a little bit towards it, and I can relate a little bit to people. So I know the minute like old normies like me would listen to this and they hear like anti-vax and they hear a conspiracy series and 9/11, they're like immediately turned off by it, and they just zap away because it makes them feel uncomfortable, makes them feel, and they don't want to, it's really, yeah, if you don't want to live in that world, you've dismissed it, you're not open to the messaging.
Yeah, it makes me feel like, from what you're saying, it seems like it's just scary, right? Like, it's scary for people to say, well, everything that I've been told my whole life has been a lie, and now I have to start from zero. I have to start everything all over again and figure out what's true and what's, it's scary. It's a lot of work to put in to figure out what's real and what's not real. But I would rather have the inconvenient truth than than the easy lie any day. At least I know it's real.
Most people want the easy life. We just have to deal with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
People are focused on their family and their stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
There's also this thing about, like, sure, everybody is wrong and you are right. That feels really weird. Like, so the whole world is lying, all these experts, all the official newspapers and scientists that say 9/11 was caused by, you know, whatever the story is. And why would everybody be in on this and lying? But it kind of reminds me of this psychology experiment where they put, you know, and there's many different variations of this psychology experiment, but one of them is that, you know, you walk into a waiting room at, like, at a doctor's appointment, and there's like 10 other people already in the waiting room. And then smoke starts coming into the room, like from under the door at two different sides. And the test person is the only one in there that doesn't know that it's a test. And the other 10 people just keep reading their book and just sitting down and not really reacting to the smoke. So that person, that test experiment, is also not reacting because he's looking at what the rest is doing. So it's, yeah. Does that make sense?
No, it's making sense.
It's all the crowd. And if the other 9 people were going crazy and leaving, then he would probably leave.
Yeah. But bro, like, at the end of the day, if you study history and like you were talking about, like, the American Revolution, I'm not really, like, I don't really know much about the American Revolution. I mean, I know a bit, but I know that in France, for example, it wasn't like one day the farmers and the guys start realizing that the kings screwed them over, and they went to the capital and took down the king and chopped his head off. It's not that. It's like the commercial, the businessman got, like, bigger, and one day they had, like, almost more money than the crown, and so they were able to organize, like, a takeover, you know. It's always, at the end of the day, it's always about economic, and like, if we want to win as a Bitcoiner, for example, is if, like, I had this conversation the other day with, like, French people. They were like, oh, we need to go and talk to politicians in France, blah, 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 blah. Because politicians in France, they go to the ministers, they go to the Binance conference, they go to the shitcoin conference and stuff. And I'm like, guys, if we want to win these guys, we need to have, like, a Bitcoin industry in France to generate revenue, and then the money will flow to these guys and we will impact these guys. Like it's happening in the States, you know, you have, like, public listed, like, miners, and then, like, you have, like, it becoming an industry. So now you have, like, deputy and people in the parliament that's kind of are pro Bitcoin, but it's happening because it's an industry, and the money at the end of the day, even if it's not directly, it's, like, coming down to these people, you know. We are not going to win, like, yeah, like, by saying, oh yeah, I do understand value proposition of Bitcoin. No, it's an economic fight at the end of the day. Yeah,
I hear you. Like, literally, just ultimately, it's the money incentive that's the most powerful.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Well.
Wow. You've actually managed to shut down Sean. Usually, Sean is right on there with the next question.
No. I thought you were saying something, Marcus. This is conversation that I really like, and it gets me thinking. And I hate when I'm just, like, talking to regular people. It's like, oh, how's the weather going? Oh, yeah, Biden, Trump, all this BS. It's like, oh, talk about stuff that's real. And this is stuff that's real, you know? Like, I don't know.
Sean, don't you, have you found yourself like, because I often struggle a little bit with this, you know, like I have more, the longer I'm in Bitcoin, the more and more I struggle having normal conversations, because when I want to speak my truth, right, in the way I see the world now, a lot of people are just not ready for that or don't want to hear that. Like, how has that been for you? Do you see that as well? Or
well, first of
have
all,
you always been a critical thinker like this? And were you always...
First of all, I think there's truth. I don't think it's my truth or your truth or anyone. I think that truth either exists or it doesn't exist. It's either things are true or there's a lie. And so if you speak truth, whether someone receives it or not, like, yeah, it can be hard sometimes when people don't receive it, but you can kind of tell who thinks critically and who doesn't, right? Like, I was hanging out with one of my friends, father-in-law the other day. He said, like, I forget what he said, something that was like already very PC, politically correct, and then he was like, oh, I don't know if that's very politically correct or not to say it that way. You know, it's just funny when people say, or like, I'll be hanging out with white people and they'll say, oh, there was a black guy. Like, they'll say black, but they'll like censor themselves from saying black. Like, they, like, it's almost like it's a swear word, you know? I'm like, and I'll call people out on that. Like, why did you say it like that? And so there's just little things that I try to call people out on from time to time, but I normally try to do it with humor, right? And I think if you can speak truth, and if you can do it in a funny way, or you can do it in a way that makes sense, that like connects with somebody, then you can speak truth to people. But if you can't connect with somebody, then no matter how you say it or what you say, they're just not going to listen. And there's some people that you can't connect with no matter what, right? They're not going to listen. You could show someone how 2 + 2 = 4. And if they've been told their whole life that it equals 5, it does not matter. If you break it down, 1 + 1 = 1 = 4, like, it does not matter. So I think you just have to speak truth, whether people listen to it or not.
It's hard to change people's mind, actually, in general. You know, like, think about that. It's really rare that when you're in a outside or in a party with people and you have a confrontation with someone, like an argument confrontation, it never happened. It's really rare that the next day you wake up and you say, yeah, it was right. It's more about, like, for example, if they see that you are successful.
Yeah.
And but at the end of the day, say, oh, maybe this guy was right. It's not that, it's not like only arguments, it's like how people see yourself. If you arrive like with a Lamborghini, 9 out of 10 chick, like a Armani suit and stuff like that, and you start talking, people will listen to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not that only like rational arguments. And I think we are,
if Elon Musk says something, he must be right because he's so smart.
Yeah. You know what I mean? We are the same too, you know, like, but it's interesting because like I'm in Colombia right now, and I came with like a bunch of two French guys, but they are not into Bitcoin. But since I'm here, I've met like 3 Bitcoiners, and every time they come to me and they say, bro, at the end of the day, like, Bitcoiners are really nice people, but I understand why they are your friends. They are all conspiracy theorists. And even like when I go and see Bitcoiners, like, I know that I'm gonna share at least like 90% of their worldview in general, you know. So, and we don't even talk about all these things, you know. I don't talk about vaccine and stuff, but I know we are on the same path. So it's always good, like, when you go in a new city or in a new country, if you go and check some Bitcoiners, you know that you will have like someone that's aligned with you, you know.
Yeah, when I went down to El Salvador, I brought down a few guys that I know to help me plan this, the halving party, right? And every day we were hanging out with Bitcoiners. And so they were like the first day was like, what do you guys, you know, they were like, I've known them for years, but I've never really gone deep into explaining Bitcoin to them because they're just not really ready yet, you know? But then we're hanging out with, you know, Winekiss and other guys, and other, and they're just surrounded by Bitcoiners, and they're like, oh, dang, all of these, like, all the things that we would say that just like, yep, like, we're all on the same page. And then they're really starting to think about things, you know, things that they may have never thought about before. And so I think it is kind of fun to watch, you know, one or two normies get inserted into a group of Bitcoiners, because we all understand these things. We've thought about these things very deeply, and then we're talking about them like it's just normal. And they're listening, and they're like, "What are you guys? You know, like what, like?" And we have all these new words and new things, but then they pick up on everything very quickly if they're surrounded by it. So it was pretty cool to see how fast.
Yeah,
learning about.
I think, bro, if we want to win, it's not only about rational argument. It's about like a social too. Like if we are like a well connected like group of individual, and it's going as far as hit the gym, be confident, eat well. Don't be a dork. Nobody wants to listen to a guy that is like fat and like spending his whole day in front of a screen and have no life experience. And that's why. I was in a Bitcoin conference in France in Biarritz like a few months ago. I organized like a fucking push-up like contest.
Yes.
Because like, that's how we win, bro. Like, it's not by staying in our place and saying, ah, blah, blah, blah. It's being out there and embody what we are, you know.
I think there was really like important, you know? I'm going to paraphrase. I think there was like a Greek general, I don't even really remember who he was, but I saw this quote one time, and who knows even if it's real, but it was like, if the soldiers are only trained in fighting and you know, knowledge is left to the intellectuals who don't fight, then you're going to have weak intellectuals and fools for soldiers, right? So it's not about just getting knowledge, but it is about strengthening your body, because when you strengthen your body and you go through the discipline to strengthen your body to not be fat and overweight, that also strengthens your mind and your emotional and like your emotions are also strong. You become more of a man when you get all of those things down.
That's why I'm okay with fat shaming and stuff. I don't care, bro. We are an army of soldiers fighting for Bitcoin. We need to keep us in check, you know, and like it's important, you know, to be soldier mindset, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Big time, bro. If we want to take down like the fucking like Federal Reserve, which is like the and central bankers, which are like the biggest power that ever existed in the entire world, it's gonna need some strength, you know.
Yeah, that's
at the end of the day, you know.
Hey, JJ, what was the reason for you to go to Colombia if you want to get into it? What do you see happening in Europe?
I've decided to leave France like during COVID, like when I remember coming back to my place one day, and I was living next to a school, and I saw like a father with his kid of like 7-8 years old, both wearing masks, and I was like, I don't like belong to with these people, you know. I need to bounce. I don't know where, but I need to bounce. And like 6 months ago, my French friend, he told me, yeah, I'm moving to Medellin. I've never heard of Colombia. I know nothing about the country. I don't speak Spanish. And I was like, yeah, fuck it. I'm coming, you know. And
Medellin is a great city to move to.
Yeah.
Never heard of it. Yeah. Like, if you were like, oh, I want to go to some random city in Latin America, going to Medellin is like the best city to go to.
Yeah. And there is no winter here. It's always like spring.
Yeah.
You're always wearing t-shirts. So yeah, I mean, bro, like the city is great. People are very welcoming. They are smiling. They are very good looking, like both like dudes and chicks. The city is actually very, very, very clean. No, it's a different like perspective. And yeah, now I just need to learn Spanish to be able to engage a bit more with local, because that's like a... That's still tough, even though like I can like talk my way through.
Yeah.
I need to
understand. I feel you, man.
I'm
getting better though.
And it's funny because with Blanc Marcus, like he literally lives like 10 minutes walk from mine.
Who?
Blanc Marcus.
Me.
We are neighbors in Medellin.
Jesus Christ.
Oh shit. Oh, I wasn't like supposed to say that.
What's your co-host name again?
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know, bro. I thought it was public. You guys you were in Medellin.
I was
it is public. You're fine. It's just that
I didn't understand. I didn't understand you were saying Plan Marcus. My bad. That's my bad.
Oh, okay.
You have to say it more Americanized.
Yeah. I got English. I got American ears, dude. You know how it is. we're not very well traveled and all that other stuff.
Sorry for my French accent.
No. That's my fault. Okay. So we've got three final questions for you. We've been doing this the last couple episodes. We've kind of touched a little bit of these, but we're gonna really go through them. So first question. What did you read or listen to that really made you like finally swallow the orange pill? What was like that aha moment? Okay, Bitcoin actually is real.
That's an interesting, as I told you, it was like a process. Like it took me like a year or 2 years almost like to understand all of this. I don't know, listening to Andreas Antonopoulos and relating it to my life experience and my ideas. Reading this Breedlove article, I remember, was like, I think it was in 2019. It was like a big moment too. And
which one was that? Was it the open letter to Ray Dalio?
No, the Bitcoin and scarcity of time.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, the life events like COVID.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the moments was like pretty interesting because I was in the tube walking in Paris with no mask on, and it was like the high of the pandemic, so everybody had masks. Yeah. But I never really wear a mask in the tube, you know. And like there is police guys stopping me to say, "Well, you should have mask." I say, "I don't have mask." I play with them. Then they give me a fine. Then I leave. I throw the fine, and I'm like, "I don't care." My bank account is empty. They're not going to catch me for that. And like this day, I've realized like the power of Bitcoin, because like they can't like mess with you because, you know, you're out of the system, you know.
So the power that it gives you is kind of.
Yeah. And I got like three or four fines for not wearing masks. I've never paid them.
It's funny because in Spain, like that's how I've seen that they've controlled a lot of people in Spain is. Everyone is scared about la multa, which is the fine, right? No one wants to get fined. And they'll do anything to not get fined. Even if it's like a 30-euro fine, it's like, oh, I can't do that. Because like you could take someone's whole freedom away, their family away. You're just like, no, we're going to fine you 30 euros if we can't have sex with your wife when you guys get married. You know?
Because you're not only getting a fine, you're also getting a record, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a thing in France, but yeah. I mean, if you don't pay the fine in France, they're gonna take in your salary. I know a guy I was working to like years ago, and he was like lots of like train fine, and he owned like 2K to the train like companies, and like his first salary they didn't touch it, but the second salary they took a cut like directly on it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So okay. Like if you are tied to the fiat system, either through a KYC job or a KY house or whatever, they're gonna fuck you up, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so Bitcoin gives you power, okay, and freedom. Okay, second question.
Yeah, it's pretty extreme. I mean, I haven't gone that far. I'm still paying taxes in Holland, even though I'm here in Colombia right now, but. Yeah, it's pretty awesome to see that people are really doing this, you know. So
my dream is like to have a world where we can all like have like KYC free jobs and like, you know, nothing seizable, you know, like it's powerful. I don't pay
taxes. So everything you do pay for in taxes is with consent, you know. So if you need something that's important, like a hospital, we pay for it with consent.
Bro, there is an easy way to avoid taxes. Just like open 10 banks accounts and receive like small portion on each. And that's fine. Nobody's going to mess with you, even if you are in France or in Netherlands.
we'll have to get into that on a different show.
Bro, you can open 10 banks accounts. If you get paid like, I don't know, 3K a month, like you do like 200, 200, 200, 200, 200. That's cool.
That's a very interesting, I'd never thought about that before. Let me call up, but not JP Morgan Chase. They will close your account immediately.
Don't get
me. So question number two. We talked about this and you actually we asked a question and it's how do you see hyper-Bitcoinization playing out? But I would add a little caveat to that. Do you see hyper-Bitcoinization playing out? And if so, how?
It depends because people have different like ideas of what hyper-Bitcoinization is. To me, if it's like an hyper-Bitcoinization where we have like Bitcoin banks and paper Bitcoin, it's not a real hyper-Bitcoinization, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. As I'm telling you, I don't think like we are going to have like very soon, I mean, in my lifetime, like a hyper-Bitcoinization where everybody's holding their key and stuff. We may have like a Bitcoin standard where people use banks and with like proof of reserve and stuff. Actually, I don't know. I'm more focused about like getting into Bitcoin's 20% of the world. That's all like freedom oriented. I think it's 20% in the entire world. And if we get to this, I think that that will be already like a success and then we can move forward. But we are still far from there, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And then the last hyper CBDC.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like prison. So, okay. What do you see as the biggest threat to Bitcoin?
People, it's human nature in general, you know, like people greed, they're going to be greedy to get some yield on their Bitcoin. They're not going to stay humble and stack that.
Yeah.
They want to try to trade or to long the market or to make loan against their Bitcoin or to try to get yield. And it's going to bring them to centralized exchange. And also, I think like being too much focused about mass adoption is a threat because we need to be very cautious with this because if we try to rush mass adoption, we're going to end up in a paper Bitcoin economy and the cycle will repeat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the best quote of the evening or the morning or the afternoon.
Where were you listening?
Yeah, I could definitely relate to that, yeah. There is, you know, we do talk about hyper-Bitcoinization a lot, but I also think like maybe if we go too fast, it will break. But
yeah, for sure.
Corey Clipston wrote an article, or maybe he said that, I can't remember if he said this or he wrote an article a while back, and he said if Bitcoin is if it's not the iPhone technology, right? It's like the Industrial Revolution or the internet or flying. He's like, these type of advents into humanity have taken decades to actually come to fruition. And he's like, what if Bitcoin, he's like, are you patient enough to let Bitcoin develop for 30 or 40 or 50 years, you know? Because what if that's what it takes? Like electricity we don't get light bulbs right when we discover electricity, right? Like we get all of these things and a power grid and all these things decades later. So what happens if that's the same thing with Bitcoin? And it's a very interesting topic that I think about a lot. Like what happens if this happens much slower than what?
Yeah, what it will. And you know how people's mentality work. In order to become a proper Bitcoiner, you need to get wrecked like once or twice, you know, either through lending platform or yield platform or shitcoins or Ponzi scheme or whatever. So it's taking time, you know, the process to become like a Bitcoiner take like at least 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you said it took you like 2 years to even just understand what money is and what the principles behind Bitcoin are. And then, like you said, you have to get burned because you get greedy or you think you can be smarter than it and you can beat Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And even
really this is a long process.
Even this cycle, like I did some mistakes too, like trying to lend some Bitcoin and trying to long Bitcoin. You know, it's not big mistake, but still, you know. It's a learning process.
Using leverage.
With a small portion of my stack, but I didn't got wrecked by it. I didn't win money much neither.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, it's interesting because when you get into Bitcoin, like in 2017 or 2018, 2019, you look back at like the Mt. Gox and you go, oh, that was forever ago, you know? And then something like Celsius happens in 2022 and you're like that was 9 years ago when Mt. Gox happened, and then Celsius happens now. And so it's
didn't we have Quadriga a couple of years ago in Canada?
Oh yeah, that is true.
So it's still happening all the time, and will happen again.
It will happen again, bro. Yeah. It will happen again for sure. Because at
and
the end
honestly,
of the
day- I still think also like some big exchanges all of a sudden announcing that the US government or the European government or something saying, oh, we have to seize all your funds, you know, and people are going to lose access to their Bitcoin on the exchanges. I'm waiting for that to happen. I really think it's a very high chance of something like that happening as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's a long process.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Stay patient, lads. Stay humble. Stack sad.
Stay safe. Hold your keys.
Hey. Yep.
Well,
don't give them to your girlfriend.
Don't give your keys away. I don't care who it is. All right, Juju, thanks, man, for coming on. Give everyone a handoff for where they can find you if you want to be found. Seems like you're the type of guy that will find people.
No, they will find me. No, I'm going to switch my handle to GGBTC. GGBTC.
GGBTC. Okay.
Yeah. So they can find me on Twitter. And yeah, that's it. So thanks for having me, guys. It was like always a pleasure to hang with like fellow members, Meme Talk. And yeah, it's good fun, guys. Love it.
Likewise, man. It's been a wild ride. And, you know, like, I will always remember these like past years in Bitcoin because it's been a period of where you learn Bitcoin, your mind is blown the whole time. And you combine that with like similar crazy personalities on Twitter where we're just having a lot of fun and memeing the hell out of shitcoiners and the fiat system and playing jokes with the media. So yeah, I appreciate you, man.
Hopefully we will all meet each other at least for the halving party. Is this happening?
Oh.
Could you give me like a glimpse of like, I'm super excited, bro.
You know they say seduction is in what you don't show. Not in what you do show.
Okay.
So gotcha. It's going to be awesome. And yes, it is happening. Cool. I think we're going to do it in March of 2024. And awesome. It's going to be in El Salvador. And we almost have the venue totally booked. I just got to, I got to finish up some things with the lady who runs it all. So.
I'll be there, man. I'll be there.
Let's go.
Because last halving, I was like just in front of my laptop screen. I was like having wine, watching like Tom Vase show and stuff. And I remember it was like, I was like in holidays at my parents' place at the time. And it was like 3 a.m. And I was like having wine, you know, in front of my screen.
Yeah.
And, like my father went down to go to peace, you know, and he saw me like drinking wine at 3 a.m. by myself in the living room. And he was like, what the fuck are you doing? I was like, You can't understand.
That's the reason why, because the last halving, I was watching Pomp crack open a beer, and I was like,
"Yeah,
so lame. Like, we should all be together doing something.
Yeah,
we should celebrate the halving." So,
yeah. All right, I'll let you in on a little secret, JJ. Right? We don't know exactly when the halving is going to be, so it's kind of a challenge. Yeah. So we don't even know. There's going to be a halving party. It's going to be very close to the halving, hopefully, right? Boom, on the halving. But there is a small chance that we're going to be partying there and that the halving didn't occur yet.
Of course. Yeah.
There'll be a party. Yeah.
It's better to do it before, actually.
Before.
Yeah.
That's what we're aiming for, March. Yeah. Marcus was the one who pointed that one out, too. He's very smart. Like, we want to do it before because it'll just...
Excitement is still...
If you do it after, it'll just be like, nah, everybody will be having tired.
Now. Yeah. That's like tough for you to try to pick, like, the right moment because I guess you have, like, 2 weeks, 1 month window, something like that.
Yeah, and you and like for people to fly somewhere, it's really hard. I wish like airlines worked on a block, like on the time chain, right? If airlines worked on the time chain, then it would be so much easier. And like hotel systems, if everything worked on the time chain, then you could literally plan it out because
that's like the ultimate Bitcoin standard.
Yeah, because that is the ultimate Bitcoin standard. Like time is on the time chain. And so that would be perfect, but we're not there yet. So because we still work with fiat time, we have to, it's hard to plan the exact day and time. And I want to give plebs a chance to buy their flights, you know,
in
advance so they get cheaper flights. I want to give everyone a chance to come down.
We were expected to have like the 100K party in sailor's boat. So
yeah,
we didn't have it. So let's make the halving party.
Exactly.
Cool, man.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks again. And for everyone watching, remember we have the Meme Factory podcast with all the members of the Meme Factory. That's this Thursday, 7:30 PM live. Don't miss out. And remember what you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, don't just let it stay here. Please share this episode. Gigi went off. He's an amazing guest. Share it, like, subscribe, leave a comment. Let us know if you liked it, if you hated it, if you think we're conspiracy theorists, if you think we're some Bitcoiners, let us know. As for Bitcoiners Guide, episode 35 from Gigi, Plan Marcus, and Big Sean, we're over now.
Accept.
Peace.